Empowered people make informed decisions that lead to living a life without regret. This is Sarah Kaki and Shauna Woods from Atlanta Divorce Law Group, and this is the Happily Ever After Divorce Podcast.
Welcome to the Happily Ever After Divorce Podcast. I'm attorney Sarah Kaki with Atlanta Divorce Law Group, and I'm joined by our very own managing partner, Shauna Woods. All right, Shauna, we need your full litigation brain on for this one. This is the post-divorce conflict our clients go through after they've gone through the massive undertaking of divorcing a narcissist. Hopefully the undertaking wasn't that massive if they had proper representation, but it's very common, as you know, when you've gone through divorce with a high conflict personality, such as a narcissist or anybody else with a personality disorder that loves a drama triangle, and they're not quite done feeding themselves off the drama frenzy afterwards, and they want to keep the control. They want to keep the narrative going. And what I see a lot is they start tiptoeing on the line of contempt, but never quite cross it. Let's start with some basic fundamental advice we can give. I think there's two different types of advice to give here. It's one is for the clients who are going through the divorce process, haven't been divorced yet, but need to make sure they're properly represented and advocated for so that post-divorce, what's been going on doesn't continue in a different form and fashion. And then the second group that I think need advice are the ones who already are done with their divorce, but the emotional abuse, harassment, and attempts at control is still there. So Shauna, with the first group that's going through the divorce process, what are some basic advice and tips you have for how you can minimize or mitigate the risk of having to go through a post-divorce action and further conflict?
Well, first, let me preface this by saying most of the time when we're talking about post-divorce actions, we're talking about people who share children together. Because the vast majority of time, once we have separated your assets and debts, and unless there's some long-term spousal support going on, you really are done with each other. There's nothing left in the legal system necessarily for you guys to continue to do. But when you do have children together, and I'm going to say this, it is extraordinarily hard to write a narcissist's proof parenting plan. It's extremely hard because of all the little things that you think through that they've done in the past. They're over there thinking, what else can I do in the future? How can I change this up? And they're going to look for any little word or loophole in your parenting plan in order to try to keep the conflict going, right? Because that's what they feed on, is this conflict and control. That being said, I do think that we do a really good job, and your attorney should do a really good job of telling you or walking you through, okay, you tell me what are some of the issues that you've had in the past, and let me try to mitigate those in the future. I will give you just a perfect example. Narcissists really thrive on that reaction, right? And getting a reaction when you're not expecting them to appear out of nowhere. And what I mean appear, it could be a text message. It could be a phone call. So a lot of times, and a lot of, you know, good family law practitioners have gone to this, is having people with high conflict only communicate through an app. Mm-hmm. That way you can prepare yourself when you open the app. Okay, I know some nastiness may come in through me to me. I know that this is going to happen. So it's not when you pick up your phone and you have this ugly, nasty text message, or you open an email and you have an ugly, nasty email, or just a, you know, very, very conflict driven email. What we're doing is removing that so that you can prepare yourself. That's a very simple solution, right? But it's a big, important solution, because dealing with someone post-divorce and having to deal with their nastiness that you thought you put behind them, right? Having to deal with the buttons that they push that you thought you've now put behind you, is really detrimental to your health and moving forward. And they can drag you back into that litigation if we don't put those protections in. Another very common one that we have gone to is to minimize the exchange times or the times that you're going to see each other necessarily, so that you are exchanging at school times or after school, so that you're not at each other's houses. You don't have to put up with this person saying, well, whose car is in the driveway?
Right.
And causing issues about this. So it's a little bit of the forward thinking that we do. Spousal support can be another issue when you're talking about older divorces and having dealt with a narcissist maybe for 25, 30 years, and you were the stay-at-home person, and now this person's going to be paying you out monthly. What I like to do, if plausible and if possible, is actually get a lump sum spousal support for them so that they can just deconnect from each other.
Because, I mean, it is true that they love nothing more than for you to have to go to them and say, you know, please, sir, please, where's my next alimony check? They love that.
Absolutely. Or it's not really late because it's only 10 days late. It's not actually 15 days late. So what are you going to do about it? Knowing that the person that you're paying is actually dependent, right, to pay their own bills on this spousal support. And it's just a continuation of the control. So knowing that going in, and I'm not saying that it's all perfect, but knowing that going in and trying to mitigate what it is downstream is extremely important when we meet with our clients, when we talk to our clients and we understand the difficulties they may have in the future. And I think that's a big part of why I'm so proud of our team, Sarah, is I was talking the other day at it was a women's group that I happened to network with, and they were asking me, you know, tell me a little bit why you believe your firm's different. I said, well, one of the key components is we try to make the ending of this divorce as soft as possible, right? We don't want you to have to come back to us for modifications. We can't always help it, but we want this to be, you know what, they did a fantastic job for me and I can take it from here.
I love that. And I agree with you. I think this is where our team really thrives, and they look beyond just, oh, we settled the case. It's what is the client left to live with? Let me ask you this. This is, you know, I think that common strategy with divorcing a narcissist to avoid post-divorce conflict is to make the agreement and the alimony conversation agreement, the child support, the division of assets, all of it as airtight as possible, because the common perception is, and it's a real one, that the narcissist plays in the gray and tries to push the boundaries and find where there's things that are uncertain, unclear, and just expand upon that. So, you know, the strategy would be to, okay, let's make things as black and white as possible, not leave a lot of room for gray. But they do out exhaust people. So they're so mad that I very frequently see a client just come and say, can we just give this piece? Like, he just really needs this piece to just be in this language. Is it okay if we just leave this vaguely and we can figure out later? Cause I'm done. I'm so tired. I just need to get out of it. Do you think that it is always good practice to just push back and go for the black and white? Or is it ever a good idea to leave a little bit of gray area for the narcissist? Is there ever a benefit of that? Or would you just say, you know what, I would always try to make it as black and white as possible to avoid post-divorce conflict?
That's a good question, but I want to challenge the way it was asked a little bit.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when someone comes to me, and it's happened very recently, and says, look, I know that he's going to use this. I get it. He's going to use this to try to control me for the next 8 years. I get you're telling me this isn't even enforceable. It could be challenged in the court, all of these things. But I'm done. I'm so exhausted. I can't do this right now anymore. So for me as a lawyer, my first response was airtight if possible, make it black and white if possible. I don't want you to have to do this. But we have to take that in conjunction of where our clients are, both emotionally and financially, because sometimes they don't have the finances to take this all the way to the court, which is what the narcissist is pushing.
Or the emotional energy anymore.
Or the emotional energy. And that's actually the most common that would happen. Now, most of the time, and I, again, preaching therapy, this is one of the reasons I'm so strong about, especially if you're divorcing a narcissist or a high conflict individual, you need to be in therapy because you need to be emotionally strong to deal this gauntlet that they are going to create for us. That being said, I'm not shaming anyone. If you got to a point where you're like, Shauna, I can't, I'm done, I support you. And we will deal with things post-divorce as they come up. And I'm still going to support you and I'm not going to judge you because only you know when that done part comes in.
I completely agree. I've spoken to a number of clients of ours at initial consults when they had something in their divorce decree that they're like, I gave this up because I was done. I couldn't do it anymore. I gave this one up, and it could very commonly be something like in legal decision making over the child or something in the parenting plan, something to your point, something that she knew or he knew was going to keep them tied to each other. And she gave that battle up just to be done with the war. And they can say it sometimes in a shameful way where like, I know I gave this up. And I always tell them like, you know, you may just be in a perfect headspace now to fight this, and you weren't back then. Because to Shauna's point, it takes a lot of personal development and self-awareness for you to do your part of getting out of the abuse. Because for a long time, you were enabling the abuse, and then the blindfold came off, and you saw it for what it is. And then you had to muster up the energy to unprogram yourself to get out of his or her programming. And that takes a lot of self-work, takes a lot of mental energy. And at some point you just have to cross a certain bridge and say, okay, when I regain my strength again, I'll cross the next one. And we completely understand that and we get it. And that's why, you know, legal strategy has to be met with who you are as a person and what the story of your divorce is and what the story of who you are and who you're up against. It's not always just this transaction. So now, Shauna, let's fast forward to the people who have gone through this divorce and are now, it is what it is. The divorce decree is what it is. Everything's been settled out, but we're still dealing with the boundary pusher. We're still dealing with somebody that's trying to make bids out to gain control. We actually have a client that is dealing with this currently. This ex-spouse is completely on the border of contempt and possibly TPO, and just dancing that dance right around it, just very harassing, bullying type behavior, never making any clear threats, but just enough to make this person constantly be on the watch out of what came through my phone. What is, if I, you know, is he going to show up at the house at any given time? What's the next exchange going to look like? Is he going to embarrass me in front of my friends, in front of my coworkers, and just on edge? And she's done the work. She's fully, you know, developed outside of the abuse. She has unhooked his programming. She's sees the pattern. What can be done? What is some advice you would have legally for a client like that?
You know, and of course, it depends on what we're dealing with in particular. And I'm not sure which one client you're talking about because we have a couple of them that may take that fat pattern. But the one I'm thinking of in particular, their ex-spouse could not let go of the thought that they cheated on him during the divorce. It wasn't true, but couldn't let go of it. And says it to a 7-year-old and says it to the 7-year-old's teachers and puts it in writing and calls up, you know, and does these type of things. Those really are actionable. You know, that's not skating on the line. That's actionable.
No, that's parental alienation at that point.
Well, it's not even, yes, it's parental alienation, but even that, in all our parenting plans and most final judgment decrees, there's non-harassment language. There's language that you're going to leave each other alone. When they can't leave each other alone is when they're co-parenting. And there's a new term that's called parallel parenting that has come into favor among people who do have high conflict parents. But the first step, even before we get into all these buzzwords, the first step that I talk about when we're talking about post-judgment is you really have to assess within yourself, client, are you trying to de-escalate the situation? Or are you trying to escalate the situation because you feel like they deserve some punishment?
Right.
It's a very important question to ask, because a lot of times when we're addressing post-judgment issues, unless there's a clear, like you were saying, violation of a protective order, a physical, or something that they are absolutely hands down, we can prove they're violating, they play so well in the gray. And people come to me and I want to get him, you know, we need to get them. And it's like, well, get them for what? What is it you're asking for in your life? Right? Do you want to be in constant litigation? Because if you want to get somebody who's a narcissist, we're going to be it until the kids are at least 18.
Yeah.
So plan and budget accordingly. If what you're trying to do, though, is de-escalate the situation, a lot of times I'm behind the scenes, Sarah. A lot of times I have clients that I have had and have had me on retainer for 15 or plus years. Because they call me up and say, here's this situation. Help me understand how to de-escalate it in a way that if it is escalated, we're protected in court. So my first statement is, if you know you are in a high conflict post-divorce situation, you have a high conflict ex-spouse, you have a high conflict co-parent, quite frankly, you probably need to keep a really good divorce attorney on retainer. And that doesn't mean you talk to them every day. Sometimes I don't talk to people for years at a time, and then they call me up and we problem solve together and we walk it through together, because we are looking at it from a different perspective than you are. And I will help people phrase things that get a better response in how to de-escalate a situation rather than that loggerheads that a lot of people see themselves in.
And I think the beauty of that is it allows you to feel a little bit more in control in a situation that you feel helpless and out of your control. And I think for so many people who have gone through divorcing a narcissist and getting out of a relationship with a narcissist is getting their power back, feeling empowered again. And there is, you know, it's one thing to find your power again after you've been felt in an abusive situation for a while. And then it's another thing when you've gotten your power back, and then you're back, put back into a spot where you're like, hold on, was that a false sense of reality I had? Was that not real? Am I back to square one? And that's such a, it just deflates you, right? It deflates that like new feeling of self-confidence you have, this new feeling of freedom you have, and they're just poking at it. But having a relationship with the attorney you trust that you know is going to have your back and help you de-escalate it, just the way you're describing it, Shauna, I think allows you to say, you know what? I can only control the things I can control. And the thing I can control is talking to a professional who deals with this all the time on what can I do to de-escalate this as much as possible. And I think there's a mindset shift too on seeing it at some point as a legal problem versus a personal problem. I think that helps. I think it helps because for so long, this feels so personal and it feels so close and it feels like you're walking around with this open wound. And we try as much as we can during the divorce process to close that wound up and get you back to you. And then when this all comes back again, it's like, damn, that wound just opened up again. But what if we're able to shift the mindset of, this is no longer my personal problem. This is just an ongoing legal problem that I have, that I have an attorney that at any point I need, I'm there, I can contact them and deal with it as it comes.
that's exactly where I was going with it as well. The legal system is a tool. The legal system is a tool that you use to accomplish certain things. And it doesn't have to be you against the legal system. You have to learn how to use the tool. And the tool is not always necessary. Sometimes it definitely is. And in those situations, you want to know from somebody who knows how to use the tool, aka us, whether or not it's time to break out the hammer, or whether or not we're talking about, let's take a step back and reorganize how we're dealing with this and put you in a better situation. And that's why you have a team, right, that you depend on. And it's so very important, I do think, especially in that first year post-separation or post-divorce, if you foresee problems, especially around child custody, keep your team on board.
Absolutely.
That's the most dangerous time to go back to have to go back to litigation is in that first year when you're still trying to figure each other out and the emotions are still high.
Because the statistics show that if this is a situation where, you know, you were the wife and you're divorcing a husband that's a narcissist, statistically, they get reengaged within 18 months. And what we usually find is that once they do that, they have found somebody else to hook them into their programming. And that might be when you're finally, you know, sort of free from them, you being the center of all their attention and the center of all their control. So to Shauna's point, those first 12 to 18 months can be the worst of it. I'm going to conclude with this thought that it all comes back to what we always say to anybody that's going through a high conflict divorce with a high conflict personality. The work begins with you, because we can get you divorced from this type of a personality. But unless you've done the work on yourself to regain your power back, to regain your sanity back and unhook the program and get rid of the operating system that this abusive personality put inside of you, the divorce papers we provide you will be meaningless, because they will continue the control post-divorce, especially when there's a child involved, almost definitely if there's a child involved. But if you have done your work and gained the gift of regaining yourself post-divorce and during the divorce, then all of this will have less of a emotional control on you. All right. Thank you, Shauna.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Happily Ever After Divorce podcast. If you'd like to learn more, go to AtlantaDivorceLawGroup.com/resources.